And good evening. This is Bob Davis. You are listening to HPPR Connect, and this is the first in our series of community conversations. This is all part of our membership campaign at HPPR Connect. And HPPR Connect, for those who may not know, is the news and information service that is provided as part of High Plains Public Radio. And we are asking for members to join us. Join us and offer your support on this Giving Tuesday. The number to call is 1-800-678-7444. And by the way, please call if you have a contribution. There are operators waiting to take your call. Also, if you have a comment, if you have anything about the conversation that we're going to have this evening, make a phone call. Let the operators know what your question is, and we will try to get it on the air. Otherwise, you can also go to hppr.org and look at the red Give Now button at the top right-hand side of the screen, and you can click on that button, and it's an easy process to join the community of listeners across the High Plains who value public radio. So as we said, this is the first in our series of community conversations, and community conversations will focus on three topics that are central to the High Plains, and even more specifically, I'd say, central to the Texas Panhandle and to the Amarillo area. And it is no accident that the first in this series of topics is the energy industry. Energy, and meaning oil and gas, as well as the wind energy industry, is central to our economy. And so that is an observation from an untrained source. So what we thought we would do, which would be a good idea, is to actually have some trained sources join us this evening to talk about the state of the industry, where it's been, what its impact is, what its future is, and what the future is for employment in the region. So let me begin by letting you know who's going to be joining us. Starting from my left and going to my right, we have David Hudson, who is the president of XL Energy for Texas and New Mexico. And then we have Dr. Joshua Parthpan, who will probably correct me on that pronunciation, and I hope he will. He is an assistant professor at the School of Engineering, Computer Science, and Mathematics at West Texas A&M University. And we also have Wes Reeves, who is a senior media relations representative from XL Energy. These three gentlemen are here, and they're going to educate us all about the energy industry and its future. So let me begin by actually asking each of our guests to sort of introduce themselves and tell us a little bit more about themselves. I'll start with David. David, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. I'm glad to be here. I've been a resident of Amarillo now for 35 years, and all 35 of those years have been with XL Energy and its predecessor, Southwestern Public Service Company. And I'm originally from Lubbock, so I've lived my whole life on the High Plains, and actually proud of it. It's just a great culture that we have in this region, and we got great learning institutions. So I'm glad to meet. meet the rest of our panel here, but you know, I'm also proud to be representing XL Energy today. We've got so much going on in this region. We're seeing a lot of growth in the oil and gas industry, but we're also one of the nation's leaders in wind energy, and we're actually building some new projects right now besides the ones that you see every day. And so I'm looking forward to talking about that, and then talking about the future. I think we've got a lot of future things that are coming up that'll be very interesting to your audience.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Josh, if you would, too, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are, and your relationship to the energy industry and to the High Plains.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity, sir. And I really thank High Plains Public Radio and the Connect members. Myself, Joshua Parthipan, I'm originally from India, but I came to U.S. before 5 years, and I've lived all my 5 years in Amarillo, Texas, and I found Texas as my new home because I love the people, love the place, and I really enjoy this place. I've been working with West Texas A&M University for the past 4 years, and predominantly in the energy field. My area of expertise is in energy, especially renewable energy and energy storage, and optimization techniques. I work as an assistant professor for electrical and power system engineering. And one of the things that in WT we do is a lot of research on energy. And we have started a brand new course in electrical engineering and also a brand new master's program, which is more intense or focused towards energy and how the future is going to be with, surrounded with renewable energy and all those sort of things. So I'm so much excited to talk about that and some of the opportunities that we have.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Wes, you're bringing up the rear. Tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Sure. You know, I grew up in the area down in Collingsworth County and left to go to school at the University of Texas. I wasn't really going to come back like a lot of kids in the area do. And within a year I graduated from college, I was back in Amarillo. But I came at this a little different. I'm a journalist by trade. What I learned to do in college, I have a journalism degree. So I actually worked in newspapers here in Amarillo and also downstate. And actually at the time, I actually covered Southwestern Public Service, which is now my employer. It became Xcel Energy. I had the energy beat as a business writer. And I remember thinking, I kind of like to work there, you know. Cause, and also, I have to laugh. My father-in-law used to say, "You need to get on at the utility company." He always used to tell me that all the time, because I married his daughter, and he's afraid I wasn't going to be able to put a roof over her head. And but you know, he had a good point, because the utility company, in our case, Xcel Energy, is really good to its employees. And I actually worked there 21 years now, so I wasn't really planning on doing that. I was just going to give it a try. And But what I've enjoyed doing at Xcel is because I'm not a technical person, I've learned a lot, and I've learned how to maybe translate that. So my role, I feel like, is taking something that's complex and something people don't always want to even talk about, try to make it understandable to listeners and to readers and viewers. And that's a challenge sometimes, but I really enjoy that. So my role primarily is media relations, but kind of a public relations role too.
Wes, thank you. And as a former newspaper editor and publisher, I want to welcome a refugee from the newspaper.
That's right. I know. There's not a lot of us left. So.
We all band together.
I know, right?
And we usually have good stories that probably aren't ready for the air.
Not quite yet. Not on this program.
Well, let's get started. Thank you all so much again for taking part in this conversation. Like I said, the energy industry is one of those things I've learned as a relative newcomer to the region that you don't have to drive very far in the High Plains region, and you will see some sort of a facility. You will see an oil well. You will see a wind energy facility, and most likely, a lot of times, I'll see them in the same line of sight as I'm driving down the highway. David, let me start with you, and then I'll invite our Josh and Wes as well. Just chime in anytime. But I mean, how did we get to this point where I presume, you know, when was it that you began to see these wind energy facilities going up?
I really think you started to see it strongly developing in the early 2000s, mainly because states at that time were putting in initiatives where they were requiring utilities to go get a certain amount of their portfolio from renewable resources. They were trying to encourage and develop renewable type resources. And also Congress had implemented production tax credits. And I think what's happened is the scale has increased so much that the cost of manufacturing wind turbines has come down to the point where it's extremely competitive and is at times below the cost of gas, natural gas, that is. And what we're seeing now is a whole different aspect of the energy environment of fracking, horizontal drilling, that natural gas is now a byproduct of oil development. And so it's very cheap. So you're seeing really low cost of energy for the United States. And it's really, to me, been a blessing to our overall national economy. We're now bringing industries back to the United States. But that's the long answer to it. Really, it was in the early 2000s that we saw the wind. And hopefully we can talk some more later about large-scale photovoltaics, because I think cells, we're going to see that in the solar development in the long term.
Very good, very good. And so the question then is, What is the state of those incentives for wind energy? And is it at a state where those are less important than they were when things first got started at the beginning of this last decade?
I mean, right now, the production tax credit is actually phasing out. If you didn't have a project that was in development in 2016, it's not going to qualify for 100% of the production tax credit. And that's why Xcel Energy started its Steel for Fuel initiative. And we're doing this in all 8 states that we operate in as we're building our own wind farms. And right now, we're actually building one south of Plainview in Hale County. And then our plans are to build another one just south of Portales in New Mexico in Roosevelt County. All of these projects are going to add up to over 1,000 megawatts of wind energy, but it's really the production tax credit that makes it economic, especially now with the lower cost of natural gas. Unless Congress, and you never know what Congress is going to do, they've reinstituted the production tax credit many times. They could do it again in the future. So right now the big initiative is to get all of this stuff built so it qualifies for the current production tax credits that are phasing out.
Wes?
You know, it made me think of something, too. We were talking about how this came about. You had these external changes. You know, you had tax policy changes. The states got involved. And then you had the local landowners that got really interested. And what we've seen, the uses of the land over the years have changed a little bit because we had a real intensive irrigated agriculture in this region, and we still do. But farmers began to see that was changing because the water table was dropping and they needed something else. So we had a lot of support. As we began to talk about bringing wind on the system, we had a lot of folks come to us and say, how do I get some of that on my land? Because it benefits them, it increases the value of their land, it gives them another income source. And so it's been pretty popular around here, too. So you've got some real conservative people in this region that you would think, you know, we try to politicize it sometimes because it's a conservative versus liberal type thing. It really isn't. It's an economic thing. And so a lot of these old ranchers and farmers around here, they've wanted this for a long time. And so we have to build a lot of transmission infrastructure also to connect these wind farms and move that power to market. And sometimes it's been kind of hard to build transmission lines, but we actually had some people coming to us saying, we want a transmission line, you know, because they knew that was the key to getting wind energy. So that's sort of the other aspect of that, I think, is the groundswell of grassroots support for it.
Talk a little bit more. What makes it difficult to get those transmission lines?
It's difficult for us in many ways because it's very expensive. It takes a lot of resources to plan and build a transmission line. But you know, a lot of folks it's changed to the landscape, or they're afraid it will change the use of their land. And so we're very careful when we plan these projects. We meet with landowners, and there's not probably a single line in our system that's very straight because we build around and they zigzag around, and we try really hard to not impact what's the uses of the land are. So there's always some concern. I think a lot of places is because it's just different. It's something they haven't seen before, and they don't, you know, like I am. I don't like to change very much, but I think it's that. But we really haven't had that much of an issue. We've built a lot of transmission. That's what David's been really busy with the last few years. We've built, I don't know how many, hundreds and hundreds of miles of new transmission line just in this region. And so that goes hand in hand with this development of renewable. That's not the reason we're building the lines. We're building the lines for the economics of our system and the reliability of our system. But a nice little byproduct is you can move wind energy on these lines and solar energy.
Very good. Josh, one of the things that David mentioned is in that discussion of extracting natural gas is an untrained eye would say is a massive technological improvements in the ways to get the oil out of the ground in terms of fracking and going sideways and other things. Is what's on the horizon? What's next? I mean, where does this go from here in terms of new technology developments?
Well, to start with, I completely agree with your point. And one thing that I wanted to really add is the Kickstarter for renewable energy is actually back in 1980s. Because back in 1980s, all the oil that we currently use is from Middle East, because we don't have enough technology to extract all the oil in Texas and even in the Gulf Coast. So all of a sudden, they formed the OPEC, which increased the oil price almost 6 or 7 times, which put us to think, do we still need to rely on foreign energy sources? That's when we created the Energy Security Act, and we started focusing more on developing our own energy sources and trying to utilize our energy source. And that's when wind came in handy, because it's a renewable source and it is high in energy security, and we have our own energy source. And as the technology improves, we were able to do more of a fracking more efficiently without any external agents affecting the safety factor of it. That way, we were able to extract all the oil with a cheap price compared to what we get out of Middle East in. So that's the driving factor. But one of the factor that, as Hudson said, wind is actually cheap, especially in this region. We call it the capacity factor. Sometimes the capacity factor of a wind reaches up to about 50%, which is very unusual, because we have the top three windiest city in U.S. We have Amarillo, we have Lubbock, and we have Aberdeen, which is some of the top cities in U.S. And the wind here is so constant, so we were able to extract more wind energy out of wind turbine, which is making it more cheaper, even when compared to a coal power plant. And also, if you think, one of the things that coal power plant and a new power plant are struggling with is the water usage. They do use a lot of water, and water is a critical resource in this region, but renewable energies don't use a lot of water. So in my point of view, I think we are actually leaning more towards renewable energy, and there is going to be a tremendous amount of growth in that particular region. Even though if we don't have tax credits in the future, I think still we are going to go in that route.
Well, let me open it up to Wes and David as well. I mean, get out your crystal ball. What is the future? Correct me if I'm wrong, is the technology is not spent. There are new things and new ways to extract energy and to create energy. Am I wrong, or what do you think?
You know, I want to kick it over to David on that, because he spends a lot of time, he's planning our business. So, you know, he's got to know where we're going to make our money too. So.
Well, I agree with Josh. You know, we do live in what's called a Class 4 wind area. It's one of the best wind resources there are in the nation. If you go to a Class 5, it's usually up on top of a mountain somewhere. You can't build a wind turbine easily up there. So we have some of the best wind resources and natural resources in this region for wind development. The wind farms that we are building now will have about a 52% capacity factor. That would be like, it's the way you look at it, it's sort of like looking at the occupancy rate or seat rates on an airplane. If you've got this wind turbine that has a fixed cost, it doesn't have a variable cost. And so the more energy you get out of it, the lower your average cost is, for that. But what we're seeing is the turbine technologies keep increasing. And the reason they're increasing is they're raising the height of the towers. They're making the blades longer, so they're able to extract more energy out of the wind. And of course, it costs more, but as long as they keep lowering their average cost per kilowatt hour, which they have been doing, I mean, right now our wind projects with the production tax credits are going to be about 1.8 cents a kilowatt hour. That's cheaper than coal. Right now, our coal cost just for the fuel is about 2 cents a kilowatt hour. Natural gas fluctuates a lot. But looking, at the crystal ball, looking out in the future, I think we will see more renewable development. We'll probably see some more wind. I agree, we will be reducing the amount of coal. I mean, a big topic nationally right now is carbon, CO2, global warming. It's not going to go away. That's not really our emphasis here, but it is groundwater. And Josh hit it right on the head of the nail. We're really concerned about the water levels, especially at one of our coal plants near Muleshoe that uses groundwater for cooling. We think we need to be conserving that groundwater, and we're going to be using more wind energy. But looking further into the future, I think we're going to see large-scale PV or photovoltaic solar farms. We have 148-megawatt farm right now just outside of Roswell, New Mexico. It's part of the same grid that serves all of this area. And I think you're going to see the cost continue to decline for photovoltaics. What's great about photovoltaics is you know the sun's going to be there, especially in the summertime when your demands are very high. It has a pretty good coincidence with your peak of the day. Whereas wind, you're really, you know, the hottest time of the year is usually a high pressure, not a cloud in the sky, and there's not a breath of wind. So it's an wind we see more as an energy substitute, but photovoltaics will also help meet our peak demand. So there are a lot of interesting things going on. And then finally, I think you're going to continue to see more and more use of natural gas that will replace coal.
Well, let me just reset. You are listening to HPPR Connect. This is the first of our community conversations, which is the central part of our membership campaign during this season. It is incumbent on me to mention that if you're enjoying this program, please consider giving a call to 1-800-678-7444 or going online to HPPR and clicking the red Give Now button. We are looking for new members to join us and support this sort of programming. This is what HPPR Connect is all about, and that is information, reliable information that you can trust, and that... We call it news at the speed of calm.
Right? Yeah, I like that.
We don't want anybody's the veins in their neck to bulge out. Yeah. We want to get to the facts, and we want to hear from informed sources who can tell us about that.